There's no such thing as reverse racism, but this is like the closest thing to reverse racism. I'm going straight to the top. Yo, 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 what's going on, everybody? Mike here, Sports in the Real Shit Podcast. Appreciate you guys joining me. As always, don't forget to like and subscribe and share and comment and all that stuff. Also, I forgot to mention last couple of times, my website is up. I built a new website specifically dedicated to Sports in the Real Shit stuff, right? You'll find links to the episodes. The episodes are still going to be on YouTube and Spotify or wherever you get them now, but you'll actually find links to be able to, you can listen directly on the website, and if you're on the website, you can link out to YouTube and watch some of my favorite clips there. I'm also going to use the website to the experts on the show. I'm going to have a page dedicated to them. And whatever other, you know, important things I come across, I find, right, whether it's book referrals, whatever it is, right, those will be on the website as well. So a page dedicated specifically for that. So we'll have sports content. We'll have, you know, real shit content as this podcast was intended to be. So if you've been following along for a while, you'll see on there my wife Joanne on there. You'll see Matt Genius, his practice information is on there. So whatever experts come on the show, they'll be on there if they choose to be, as well as whatever I, you know, think is, you know, I want to share with you guys as critical things that I think you should know about, whether it's related to health, money, you know, whatever it is, it'll be on the website as well. Also, some of these shirts that I'm wearing, I made them myself. I designed them myself. I think they're pretty funny. So if you think they're pretty funny, you can go on the website and purchase a t-shirt as well. More to come on that. So yeah, so we're making big moves over here. Sports in the Real Shit is not just a podcast. It's a movement. A website, you know, there's more to come. Just wait on that. So yeah, check that out when you get a chance for sure. It's sportsandthereal.tv. Sports and spelled out, sportsandthereal.tv. And actually, if you do sportsandthereal.com, it'll take you there too. But the official website is sportsandthereal.tv. If you're on the YouTube, if you're on my YouTube page at all, you'll see the link out, the URL out to the website, sportsandthereal.tv. So appreciate y'all checking that out for sure. All right, that's out of the way. Just finished watching the women's championship game, women's Final Four March Madness championship game, and it was pretty exciting. Like I said last time, yo, it's not that the women play a better brand of basketball than the men, or it's more exciting per se. Like basketball for basketball, the women's game is more exciting than the men. That's not what it is. It's just that the women have the storylines that the men don't. Because these dudes are leaving after 1 year, right, 6 months on campus and they're out, which I don't blame them. They weren't getting paid, right, whatever it is. Because they're not staying and they don't have anything, a storyline to follow. We don't even know who these guys are. They're good players, some of them. Some of them are just tall. And they're dominating kids who are nowhere near their height. That's a different conversation. College basketball needs help, but that's a different conversation. So the women's game is exciting because there's a storyline. South Carolina just won a championship. They have a storyline. Last year, they got put out in the Final Four by Iowa. And Caitlin Clark was waving off the girl from South Carolina, I forget her name, as she was taking a three-pointer, left her wide open, disrespectfully, you know, waved her off. And South Carolina came back and got the revenge. And then there was the whole Caitlin Clark versus Angel Reese fiasco. Like, that whole thing was crazy. So that's why the women's game is more exciting. The women's college basketball tournament is more exciting because of the storylines, not because of the basketball is just so much better. the storylines. But before I get to that part of it, I do want to say Iowa beat – one of the reasons Iowa was able to win against UConn in the Final Four on Friday night, they called a moving pick on Connecticut. And I'm going to say this as somebody who watches a lot of NBA basketball. If the NBA called moving picks like college basketball, the college basketball ref called a moving pick against Aliyah Edwards, and I'm not saying it's a bad call. I'm just saying that call doesn't usually get called, whether it's late game or early game. That moving pick happens a lot, especially in the NBA game. Like if the NBA refs called moving picks like that, I don't know if Steph Curry has any rings. I don't know if Steph has any rings if the NBA refs called moving picks like they did against UConn. Because that's all those boys over there do. That's all they've been doing for the whole run. Draymond and Looney and all of them. That's all they do is set moving picks. And the NBA refs never call them. So when you see Steph splashing threes and you wonder why he's so open a lot of times, it's because they're moving picks and the NBA refs don't call them against the Golden State Warriors. So I'm half joking here when I say if the NBA refs called moving picks like they did against the Golden State Warriors, like they did, the college basketball refs did against UConn, Steph might not have any championship rings. Uh-oh. Nah, seriously, though, that was a tough call. And I'm not mad at UConn fans for feeling that that was a tough call in that spot. Yeah, technically she was moving. But honestly, she was doing that all game. Those picks were being set the exact same way pretty much all game. And nobody ever calls that. So to call it in that situation, I could see where the hurt is at. We're like, damn. And of course people were like, yeah, the NCAA wants Iowa in the championship. So of course they're going to make that call. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they do. Caitlin Clark is a big draw. But I just know that in the NBA, that call hardly ever gets made, and it never gets called against the Warriors. Like Andrew Bogut, Kevon Looney, Draymond Green are in the Illegal Screen Hall of Fame. Right there, and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson are the big beneficiaries, and the Warriors have four championships as a result of that. That's my take, and I'm sticking to it. But fantastic tournament, though, for real, by the ladies. So now that that's out of the way, right, the true storyline, of course, of the women's game is this Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese thing. Their game in the Elite Eight, Iowa versus LSU, drew 12.3 million viewers. Listen, you can lie to yourself all you want, all right? I try to be as honest as I can on this podcast. This thing split almost right down the middle of the country in terms of black versus white. It was racial from beginning to end, all right? This is Magic and Bird in the 80s. Anybody who says it wasn't racial, right, the size they chose, is lying to you. It was racial. Typically, white folks don't like loud, brash black athletes, right? Going back to Muhammad Ali and, you know, whoever else, T.O., can't think of other, anybody else, right? Randy Moss, right? Like, if you remember how T.O. and Moss got treated, right? They were the locker room cancers, right? Nobody wanted, you don't want these guys on your team. They're too loud, they're too brash, they're too cocky. And Angel Reese gave off that same feeling, that same aura, right? She was T.O. Randy Moss. And white folks ain't going to admit this, but they don't like that. White folks don't like cocky, brash black folks like that. Muhammad Ali wasn't loved. He wasn't called the GOAT until the end. Until he started winning so much that they couldn't deny it. That's when Muhammad Ali became the GOAT. But before that, people weren't feeling Muhammad Ali like that. So, yeah, a lot of white folks supported Caitlin Clark. Yes, she was great, but also because they needed somebody They needed somebody to shut Angel Reese up. That's just a fact. All right? You ain't got to lie to yourself. It's a fact. They needed somebody to shut Angel Reese's ass up, and she beat her, so she did. And black folks, on the other hand, right, took the opposite side because they saw the, you know, the damage and the abuse that Angel Reese was getting. So black folks supported Angel Reese. And I said it last year. I said it last year around this time, right, when they met each other in the championship game, right? People can say whatever they want to say, right? Black folks, like I said last year, black folks, you know, we see the different treatment for white girls, for white men, girls, whatever, right? For white folks. We see Caitlin Clark last year was doing all this stuff. It was all good until Angel Reese did it. We saw all that. So if you missed that episode last year, go check it out. Literally a year ago. And the problem with that is white folks aren't going to admit it, but black folks ain't going to admit it either. Black folks aren't going to admit that they supported and were caping for Angel Reese because she's black. Man, it's true. It's true. Black folks were caping for Angel Reese because we saw that, we saw the abuse. We saw, you know, how much hate Angel Reese got for being who she is. Heck, truthfully, she bought a lot of it on herself. And a lot of black folks are like, well, we're going to support her. We're going to take the opposite side, even though Caitlin Clark is an absolute stud and baller. But for the longest time, black folks have witnessed as, you know, the black person is brash and loud and they get called cancers and, you know, misfits and all this stuff, right? Nobody likes them. And then, you know, when there's a loud Tom Brady getting up in teammates' face, it's like he's just a fiery competitor. He's just a competitor. Don't we love that about him? He's just a competitor. So Tom Brady gets to be loud and up in people's faces and throwing things and on iPads on the ground and all that stuff. He gets to be a competitor, but T.O. can't be a competitor. He can't be upset. He can't be upset that his quarterback missed a read. Tom Brady can be upset that his receiver missed a read, ran the wrong route. He's just a competitor. T.O. can't be that. So we know the differences of sides get taken automatically, right off the jump. But part of what I didn't like in this whole thing is some of the hate that went towards Caitlin Clark. There was a lot of hate towards Caitlin Clark in this whole thing. Because, again, because white folks went all out in supporting Caitlin Clark, black folks went all out in supporting Angel Reese, it kind of felt like, if I'm being honest, some black folks used that as an opportunity to talk down on Caitlin Clark's game. Like, she wasn't like that. And it got to a point where it felt like a lot of folks were kind of jealous of Caitlin Clark. Like, a week ago or so, you know, leading up to the, you know, Final Four in the Elite Eight, I think it was, you know, Ice Cube, you know, comes out on Twitter and he offers, he says that there's a $5 million offer on the table for Caitlin Clark to join the Big Three. First of all, Caitlin Clark's not going to the Big Three, right? She would not do much there. She would get out physicaled out of the game. So it wouldn't make any sense for her to go to the Big Three. But a lot of folks came out, whether it was social media, you know, people were just going all in. Well, why is Ice Cube offering Caitlin Clark $5 million? Why didn't he offer anybody else $5 million? All these other great players that's come before her, why Caitlin gets to be offered $5 million? And ESPN Magazine has a 96-page issue coming out specifically focused on Caitlin Clark. And people are upset. How come there wasn't no ESPN Magazine 96-page issue for Caitlin Clark? And honestly, yo, it feels like big-time hateration. All right? There's no such thing as reverse racism, but this is like the closest thing to reverse racism. Like, black folks were upset that the white girl was getting some of these opportunities. But what's missed in all that is that, in my opinion, Caitlin Clark isn't getting these opportunities just because she's white. This ain't like Maria Sharapova getting her ass beat by Serena Williams and still getting, you know, more endorsements and all these things. No. Caitlin Clark is a baller. And the reason why people want her, people are watching her, is because she's doing things that women weren't doing before. She's not just an all-time leading scorer. Right? You could have her in this GOAT conversation if you want to or not, right? You could say that I've said there are better women's basketball players that have come before her. No doubt about it. I talked about Maya Moore and Diana Taurasi and Cheryl Swoopes. Like, I talked about all of them, right? Simone Augustus. I've talked all about them, that there are better women basketball players than Caitlin Clark that have come before her. But she shoots some deep ass threes, and that's what is captivating to the audience now. Deep ass threes. Just like Steph Curry came in, and everybody was amazed by how somebody can shoot, from so far out. Now, since everybody's doing it, Dame's doing it, nobody cares anymore that Steph Curry shoots 30 footers. But the women's game hadn't seen that yet. So people aren't flocking to watch Caitlin Clark and trying to get endorsement deals with her, and not because she's the GOAT player, but because people are amazed by how far she's shooting, and that's captivating to people. The truth is, the majority of the people who are, on her bandwagon now, they're just that. They're casuals. They're bandwagoners. They're casuals. So they don't watch the woman's game for the detail. They're watching now because this girl is amazing and she's pulling up from 25, 28 feet. So that's why she's getting all the attention. It's not because there's no racism behind it. Don't go at Ice Cube saying, well, he should have, all these black girls that we sound like some haters. No, man. He's going after her because she's bringing in millions of eyeballs because she's shooting from way deep. And people are amazed, just like Steph Curry was the first unanimous MVP in the NBA, in a league that's seen Michael Jeffrey Jordan and LeBron James and Kobe Bryant. Steph Curry was the first unanimous MVP because he was shooting some deep ass threes. People were amazed by that. They're not gonna admit it, but that's why Steph Curry got all the pub that he got. His season wasn't so amazing that he deserved to be the unanimous MVP. It's because he was doing some unseen stuff, and people were ready to catapult Steph Curry into conversations he had no business being in after his first or second ring. Because the deep shots captivated the audience. Just like in the NCAA women's tournament, the deep shots captivate the audience. I know for some it feels like, well, the white girl's getting all the attention. I say, and I propose to you, it's not the white girl getting all the attention. She just happens to be white. If it was a black girl shooting deep shots like that, she would probably get all the attention too. Now, it helps that she's white. I ain't gonna lie. It helps that she's white. But if it was a black girl shooting deep threes, she would be getting all the attention too because it hadn't been seen in the women's game before. So don't be haters, y'all. Like some of us sound like, when Tiger was starting to take over golf, like some white folks were uncomfortable when Tiger was taking over golf. We remember Fuzzy Zeller, in his statements at the Masters. Don't be Fuzzy Zeller, y'all. Don't be the haters. Don't be the people who were hating on Serena when Serena was capturing all of these grand slams and majors and things like that. And people coming at her, like, don't be like that. Saying, oh, this old head was better than Serena. Like, nah, man. Serena was killing folks. And there was nothing the women's tennis game has seen like Serena. Just like the women's game hadn't seen anything like the shooting of Caitlin. She may not be the best player ever. You could think it's Maya Moore, I do, or Swoopes or Cheryl Miller. But I'm telling you, she's not getting all these eyeballs because she's white. She's getting all these eyeballs because she can shoot the hell out of the ball. So appreciate her. This ain't Maria Sharapova getting all the endorsement deals, y'all. This is something else. This is truly a great player getting the attention that she deserves. And more eyes on the women's college basketball game. Hopefully, those eyes can translate as she moves on to the WNBA. More money for everybody, right? That's what we want. More money for everybody. And if she can bring those followers from the college game to the WNBA, that'll be more money for all of y'all. Like, nobody cared. Nobody knew, actually, nobody knew that Kelsey Plum held the women's scoring record, D1 scoring record. Nobody knew that. She's white. So it's not just a white girl thing. It's she's shooting crazy deep. That's why she got all these people following her. Casuals are watching the game. Hell, I'm watching the women's college game more than I've done in a long time. Because of Caitlin Clark. It's okay to admit that. We don't have to hate her just because white folks hate on Angel Reese. All right? We ain't gotta do that. The girl is a straight baller. So now that the college game, the women's college game, not that the women's college game has gotten all the attention and all this stuff, you know, I got to thinking, how do they keep this momentum moving forward? Right? How do you go from 14 million viewers in the UConn Iowa game? There was 12.3 million viewers in the Iowa LSU game. Like, how do you take these millions of viewers and turn them from college basketball to the WNBA? Heck, those 14 million viewers in the Final Four semifinal game, Iowa and UConn, those 14 million viewers was more than any game in the 2023 NBA Finals. So more people watched that game than any game in the 23 NBA Finals. But the thing is, the WNBA Finals, the games get less than a million viewers each. There is literally hardly anyone watching the WNBA Finals. So how do we translate, how can the ladies, the women, translate these viewers from the college game to the WNBA? And to keep those folks next year coming back to watching the college game when Caitlin leaves and Angel Reese leaves. Because the drama ain't there no more. The deep shots ain't there no more. The antagonists ain't there no more. And that's going to be the biggest question for the women's game moving forward. How do we keep the interest? And specifically, how do we keep the women interested? Because the biggest issue for the women's game, right, especially the WNBA, the biggest issue was that it's actually more men who watch the WNBA than women. If you go to this website, Statista.com, they did a survey, and essentially the survey said that 11% of men are avid fans of the WNBA. 29% of men are casual observers of the NBA. So you can say that 40% of the men who responded are either avid or casual fans of the WNBA. Whereas on the women's side, only 4% are avid, would say they're avid fans, and 19% say they're casual fans. So 23% say they're even, you know, an avid or casual fan of the WNBA. So more men are watching the WNBA than women. So the question for the WNBA is, how do we get more women to watch? Because dudes are watching, right? The dudes are watching, I'm guessing, because my thought is dudes are watching because, you know, they love basketball, and a lot of dudes are interested in basketball. At least I was when I was younger, right? They're gonna watch basketball no matter what because they like basketball. They love basketball. And they like watching, you know, the strategy in basketball that the women's game has, honestly, more than the men's game. Because the men game tends to just favor athleticism. The women game tends to be strategy and cutting off ball and, you know, some of the stuff we grew up playing. So that's going to be the next barrier, right, for women, for the women's game to cross, is how do we get more ladies, more young girls who go from AAU, right, youth basketball, young girls are like the most played, like women's or girls basketball, girls AAU basketball is like the most played sport. But for some reason, that doesn't translate to fandom later on. And I don't know why that is. Like, I remember like one of my first jobs out of college, I met this young lady who was working at the job I was working at. She played D1 volleyball. And we were talking, and she was like, I've never watched a single minute of a WNBA game. I'm like, what? And here I am thinking, damn, I've been watching WNBA since its inception. I was watching Cynthia Cooper and Cheryl Swoops and Tina Thompson. Like, I knew Teresa Witherspoon of the New York Liberty. What the? But she was like, yeah, she's just not interested. So the next barrier, the next frontier for the women's game is how do we take all of these fans and get them to the WNBA? And moreover, how do we get the women to watch the WNBA? Because more men watch the WNBA than women. That's the question for them. And that actually kind of brings up another point, y'all. This is where this episode kind of takes a turn for kind of a serious conversation. So with men watching, right, with men being the primary viewers of the WNBA and really women's basketball in general, we have a problem now in the discourse around women's basketball because men are watching and men are commenting, whether online or social media. And I'm going to say this. Men, I'm going to choose my words carefully. When men watch sports, when we watch basketball, we always watch sports from a male's perspective, our men's perspective, all right? But unfortunately, when we watch and then we comment, it always comes off as we're mansplaining or we're being misogynistic. So men aren't allowed to comment on women on a women's game at all unless we're complimenting, right? Like we're only strictly allowed to talk about the product on the court that's being played, and we can't be too harsh in our assessment. So as a result, whenever, you know, a man says anything about the game that women just don't like, don't want to hear, we're called misogynistic. We're mansplaining, right? So men can't comment on the women's game unless we're essentially complimenting, right? Or we're making minor, you know, providing minor feedback. But what people need to realize, and women need to hear this, is men aren't being misogynistic when they comment on the ladies' game. Men are essentially saying, this is the viewpoint we're coming from as men, and our reference point is the man's game, the men's game. The men's reference point is the men's game, the NBA, the men's college basketball game to a certain degree. But when we provide feedback and say things, it's always like, oh, you're being misogynistic, you're hating these ladies. And it's like, no, you got to understand the viewpoint that men are coming from. So Draymond Green has gotten in trouble and Michael Porter Jr. has gotten in trouble, you know, online for, you know, saying on different podcasts or different venues, different forums, that maybe the women's game should lower the rim to make it more exciting. And of course, all hell breaks loose when you say that, because the women feel like, essentially, as men, we're just supposed to be observers. Men are not allowed to provide any sort of feedback to improve the women's game because it's going to come across as misogynistic. It's going to come across as mansplaining. Or what happened in this last week where Angel Reese, you know, they lose. LSU loses to Iowa. And Angel Reese is asked a question about, you know, her teammates were, you know, talking about how great she is and how much she puts up with. And, you know, men or people are in her DMs, you know, emailing her all types of nasty, racist and sexist stuff and all these things, right? And somebody asked her, you know, one of the reporters there asked her in a conference after the game, you know, how she feels about it. And, you know, she's breaking down and she's talking about how she feels, you know, she's hurt because she's being sexualized, which is totally understandable, 100%. The problem is, though, as men, when we hear that after a loss, after you've been trash talking and you've played the villain, as men in sports, we've never allowed someone to play the villain and then after the game, to come cry, right? To complain about the hate that you got. Because as men, we feel like you're biting onto yourself. Yes, some of it is harsh. A lot of it is harsh and racist and sexist and misogynist and all that is true. But what men, as men, it's essentially what has been built up in men in a really, not just in a competitive space, at all times, men are essentially told, men don't cry, men can't cry, men can't show emotion. But especially in a competitive space, after you've played the villain card, right? You wanted to be the villain and you lose. A lot of men, we're not programmed to really want to hear somebody cry after they lose and say, well, they feel like the victim and, you know, they're hurt by all the stuff that's in their DMs. It's wrong that her DMs were full of hate, but fans are hating on everybody no matter what. Fans hate on NBA players to their face, calling them all types of names. And certainly in their social media DMs. Like DJ Burns, NC State, for you, for those of you who follow, you know, NC State in their basket, in their run to the Final Four. DJ Burns posted on IG and it made its way to Twitter. He posted a letter that he got in the mail. And all DJ Burns does is get buckets and smile. And he's getting hate mail. I'm sure his DMs are full of racist stuff. So it's not that men are inconsiderate. It's not that men aren't sensitive to what the ladies go through when they get hate mail and that it's going to be hurtful. I think what men feel is that in a competitive space, there is no room to cry and play the victim, especially when you were playing the antithesis, you were playing the villain the whole time. That's just the way it is. So as men, right, it's in our nature. It's in our nature to solve problems. So when we're watching the WNBA, right, people in relationships know this. When men are watching the WNBA, right, they're like, how can this game be made better? Maybe lowering the rim so the ladies can dunk. Now, there's nothing to say that's what solves it, right? Clearly, women shooting deep threes like Caitlin Clark would help, but there's only one Caitlin Clark. But Draymond and Michael Porter Jr. were just providing their takes. So as men, right, it's in our nature to want to fix things. So it's just them trying to make recommendations, what they thought were positive recommendations. Women took it the wrong way, and it's mansplaining, it's misogyny. Nah, that's just the way it is. And the Angel Reese situation, you know, dudes get in trouble for going on TV and saying, you know, we kind of don't want to hear you talking about being the victim after you played the villain. It sounds harsh, but that's what it is. Like, as men, we wouldn't allow, if LeBron is playing the victim, we wouldn't allow LeBron to come after the game and talk about how his DMs are full of people calling him the N-word. Draymond Green, like, is a villain 100%. He knows he plays a villain role. Ain't nobody going to sit there and listen to Draymond talk about how his DMs are full of people calling him this and that and animal and N-word and... Yeah, we know your DMs are full, man. We know what these athletes go through in the spotlight. Hell, people on TV call them stuff on TV. Westbrook is begging for people to say his last name correctly and not call him Westbrick, but they refuse to do it. These dudes get bashed on TV. I'm sure their DMs are lit up with crazy stuff. Racist and all type of stuff. But after the losses, men are just programmed differently. It's unfortunate, man. So ladies, you're going to have to excuse us for the way men watch and absorb and comment on women's sports. Excuse the men for how they handle things and process things because we're coming from a different perspective and we're different than you guys. It may feel insensitive, but that's just how men process things. We're trying to fix things. And we've grown up all our lives being told to man up. We're not allowed to cry. Win or lose, you're not allowed to cry. Nothing can hurt you. That's why a lot of dudes now are coming out, you know, with mental health stuff, saying, hey, they're hurting. But the truth is, nobody wants to hear that from men. And if men are going to be the biggest consumers of the WNBA and women's basketball, then some of the feedback that men provide may seem harsh. So forgive us for the harshness, or what seems as harshness. Forgive us for being cold or seeming like it's cold. It's just, you know, that's just in our nature. Men's nature is to try to fix things, and it's to not be emotional, to not share about being a victim when you lose. That's how we've been built. Different sexes. And yes, for so long, men have told women to stay in their place, stay in the kitchen, and maybe that's just blowback because of that. Maybe the ladies are like, who cares what y'all think? For so long, y'all told us to stay in the kitchen and stay away from our game. Don't talk about our game. You never played, so you can't talk about our game. Maybe it's just them saying, hey, we can't talk about your game, so y'all don't talk about ours, which is fair. But the truth is, more men support the WNBA than they do, than women do. So men are going to have to comment, right? Men, if men walk away from the WNBA, then hardly anybody's watching. So there's going to have to be some kind of meet in the middle or come to Jesus moment or something, because I feel the women, I feel the ladies and saying, hey, don't tell us how to fix our stuff. We think our stuff is exciting. Just sit down and watch. Also, allow us to feel emotional and to feel differently, you know, when we're mistreated, even after a loss, when we feel abused. And the men are like, no. The men are like, if you've, especially if you've played the villain, it is what it is. Whatever you get is what you get. That's the truth is, that's how a lot of men feel. Whatever you get is what you get, especially when you're playing the villain. It's tough to hear and it's tough to digest, but that's just the viewpoint that men are coming from. And I hope the ladies understand, and I hope they grant us grace as we get better as men, right? Being partakers of women's sports and commentators in women's sports. Or just tell us to F off and go back to the kitchen. I don't know. Go drink a beer. I don't know. So it's gonna be interesting. All right. As this thing moves forward, hopefully more women get engaged. But in the meantime, as men continue to watch, you know, there's gonna be more flare ups for sure. I'm just hoping that, you know, there's grace from the ladies in all of this. So last episode I touched on briefly talking about sports betting and the Shohei Ohtani saga, and I haven't heard much more about that. But I did want to talk about sports betting again, because there's been some stuff that come out the last couple of weeks that I wanted to talk about, and stuff I've seen and read up on, and it's going crazy. So, as you can imagine, right, sports betting is going way up, okay? Sports betting, listen to this. Revenue from sports betting. Under $1 billion, right? $900 million in 2019 revenue. 2020, $1.5 billion in revenue from sports betting. 2021, $4.3 billion. 2022, $7.5 billion. 2023, $10.9 billion. That's in revenue. So revenue is money that they, you know, get from people playing and minus their payouts. So $119.8 billion have been wagered through sports betting in 2023. Damn. That's a lot of money. So sports betting is going way up. And as I'm reading up on this, I have some issues. I have some problems that I want to talk about, okay? I mentioned to you guys that I'm reading the book, or I was reading the book called The Psychology of Money. I need to check that book out. I'm going to put that book on a website as well as a reference. Y'all need to check out The Psychology of Money. But one of the episodes it talks about, the story is, you know, the author had spoken to a casino employee in Vegas. And, you know, they asked the casino, the employee, like, how do you win at gambling? And the answer was, to exit as soon as you enter, because you don't win. You don't beat the house. Few people do. The house always wins. So that leads me to my point, in that there is a huge problem coming down the pike in this country because of sports betting. And I don't know if people are making enough noise about it, so I'm going to talk about it here. All right? Hopefully, it makes its way to you guys and you guys tell your friends and family, because I don't know what to say, man. First of all, there's a huge impact on players, and there's a huge risk on players right now. I don't know if you guys saw this, but Jonte Porter, who's a brother of Michael Porter Jr., his current salary is like $415,000 a year, okay? You know, he's a, you know, end of the bench type of player. But he recently got caught essentially kind of betting on himself, right? Or helping others to bet on his games. Prop bets. So you know what prop bets are, right? This person over under will score over 10 points, under 10 points, right? Those types of things. So between January and March, you know, he got caught in a scandal with prop bets. Essentially, you know, he knew what the prop bet was, so he was checking himself out early. You know, one time he claimed he re-injured an eye or something like that, right? But he was checking himself out early, so he would get the under, or the people who was betting that line bet the under. That's ridiculous. Like, can you imagine? Like, these dudes know these things. And yeah, we made fun of Calvin Ridley, and the Shohei Ohtani thing is still outstanding. We don't know what's going to happen there. But there is such a huge risk. And it's crazy to hear people say, well, there's no way Shohei Ohtani, you know, could do this and that. How do you know? In last episode, I talked about, you know, never enough. Like, sometimes the money can be never enough, no matter how much money you make. Bernie Madoff was a multi-millionaire. Beginning in the late 80s, Bernie Madoff was making like $100 million a year. The brother was rich, rich. But somehow that wasn't enough. He had to go run a Ponzi scheme, end up in jail. The brother was already a billionaire. So there's no such thing as, oh, I make so much money, I'm not going to gamble. So to tell me that athletes aren't going to gamble because their salaries are so crazy, whether it's NBA, MLB, NFL, no, man. For some, millions of dollars is not enough. It's never enough. So it's totally possible that somebody in one of these leagues is going to do something crazy. Like if Kevin Durant goes off for 50 points, is that because he's hot, or is that because he knew what the over-under was? How do you know? How do you know? Maybe he does it just once, or maybe he does it sporadically. Who knows? If he has an off night, is he truly an off night? Or is it possible that Kevin Durant just isn't taking it seriously enough because he's trying to hit the under? And I'm just using KD as an example. Like, it could be anybody, right? Booker, Bron, it could be anybody. Like, assuming that because somebody has so much money, like Shohei Ohtani, you know, just signed his $700 million, assuming that just because he has so much money, he will never bet is crazy. It could happen to anyone. Bernie Madoff was rich, rich before he started running his Ponzi scheme. He was one of the richest guys in the world before the Ponzi scheme. The man was freaking at the... He was chair of the, Bernie Madoff was chair of the NASDAQ stock exchange. Like, the man had made it. But he ran a Ponzi scheme because for some dudes, no amount of money is enough. Plenty of people have ruined their legacy because they want more than what they already have. Whether it's a thousandaire wanting to be a millionaire wanting to be a billionaire, it's happened. So, yeah, this thing's going to impact players. And we're not going to know if this guy is balling out of control. Is it because he's trying to hit the over? How do you know? And dudes may be stressed out because, you know, hey, listen, man, gambling is gambling. And dudes get in debt. Michael Jordan, dudes get in debt. It happens. So, yeah, I could see this thing going all types of ways with players getting involved in some deep stuff. It's funny because I visited in Vegas. I went to Vegas last year with my wife on vacation, and we went to the Mob Museum. And the Mob had heavy control in sports, boxing. Like, They were all over that stuff. The thing is, when you go to the mob museum, it makes it sound like, the mob no longer exists. And I'm like, yeah, right. Yeah, the hell right. To you? So you don't think there's some underground stuff going on? You think the mob is all gone just because they're not executing people in daytime anymore? You don't think there's some underground stuff that can control some of these dudes? And next thing you know, they owe somebody a couple million dollars and they have to throw a game or two? You don't think that's possible? Whatever, man. Believe that if you want. So, yeah, Jontay Porter, the brother of Michael Porter. Yeah, Jontay Porter is a low-level guy, right? I don't know what his winnings were, but DraftKings caught him, and then other, bookies, pretty much said the same thing. Oh, yeah, they noticed that, and, he's probably going to be suspended. The NBA is probably going to make an example out of him, but who knows? He's a low-level guy. What happens when one of the big boys get caught in it? So the players are at risk of being at risk, right? But then there's an impact on fans. Fans already talk trash to the players. Fans already disrespect players 100%, right? They call them all types. We're talking about Angel Reese and her DMs. Dude's DMs are already filled with N-word and this and that, right? It's already happening. But fans are gonna, or not gonna, fans are taking it to a whole nother level now in their disrespect. Pro and college. So I was reading online on Twitter. There's this kid, Carson Barrett. He, ended up getting hurt. Essentially, what's happening is, he got hurt. He got put in the game. And later in the year or whatever, last second, he makes a shot or whatever. And the game was a blowout. Of course, but he makes a shot, and when the scores change, people's, over under, all that stuff, right? I'm not a gambling expert. All that stuff changes. And people are going in on this dude who hadn't really played much all year. People on his, in his DMs disrespecting him. Like, you sure are a son of a bitch. This is stuff I'm reading, right? From his DMs. Hope you enjoy selling cars for the rest of your life. I hope you fucking die. That's what they're telling this dude. I can't imagine what's happening to pros. So if you're, in the bench guy, you come in at the last second, you're essentially, you don't know what to do, right? Do you try to show some skills, hopefully get more minutes and make a couple buckets, enjoy yourself out there? Or do you, because somebody has some money on the game. It's just crazy to me, like, the stuff that's gonna happen. And here's the problem, right, with all this, is that the gambling stuff is attracting more and more younger audience, more and more younger people. That stuff is on college, all over college campuses, right? And then when you read the studies show that young men are at higher risk of problem gambling, right? Young men are at higher risk of chasing their losses. Like, people between 18 and 20 are significantly more likely to chase losses and bet beyond what they can afford than anybody else. College campuses, you got all these people, DraftKings, all these people. And these kids are throwing away their financial aid money or their parents' money or whatever money they happen to work for. Yeah, it sounds cool that I won $5, my parlay hit $400. It sounds cool, but the truth is the house doesn't lose, man. So for every person that makes 5, 10, 20 bucks, there's people out there losing hundreds and thousands of dollars. So DraftKings and, all these guys, Prize Picks, they're making mucho dollars while these young kids are losing their money, and that's going to have an effect. It's absolutely going to have an effect on the rest of us, whether you gamble responsibly or don't gamble at all. It's going to have a long-term effect. And the NBA doesn't care. The NFL doesn't care, right? The NBA is now talking about you can this live betting during the NBA broadcast, right? Props change during the NBA. You can bet. Again, as I'm reading these studies, right? The dopamine release is more for gambling than any other addictions like smoking, drugs, and alcohol. So you got these young kids, dopamine being released, and they're like on a high, having a great time, just gambling their life away. And nobody seems to care. And everybody's making off of it. Like, all the big time podcasts were sponsored by a gambling spot. ESPN has, you know, their own thing. Like, gambling, sports betting is all over now, and everybody's making boku money off of it, big time money off of it. But the question I ask is, what happens when the beat stops? When the music stops, what happens? Who's going to be left holding the bag? Not the execs. It's going to be regular folks who don't bet. Just like in 2008 with the housing crash and variable interest rates, right? People, responsible people knew at some point the variable interest rates would catch up to folks. Some people predicted it, and then it happened and it crashed. But everybody pays for something like that. Not just the people who participated, not just those who violated, not just those who were violated. Everybody pays for it when something like that happens. So when the music stops with this whole gambling and sports betting crap, we're all going to pay for it. And that's unfortunate. So I'm speaking out about it because I don't want to pay for that, right? Just like I don't want to pay high insurance rates because people don't eat right. I just don't. Not that I'm a perfect eater. Not that I'm perfect. But if I go to the gym and take care of my health, I still have to pay high insurance because other people don't. I pay higher car insurance rates because not everybody drives responsibly. We live in this web interconnectedness in our society, in this world, and I'm going to speak out about it. I don't bet personally because I've never won a bet in sport. I've never won a sports bet. I've mentioned that before. I've never won a sports bet. So I don't bet. Small money, big money, I don't bet nothing because I've never won jack. At the casino, I've never won jack. So I don't bet. I don't like losing money. But there's a big crash coming, man. There's a big crash coming, and everybody is splurging right now. Everybody's taking in big time money off of it. But when the music stops, everybody's going to be left holding the bag, and it's going to be empty. But the execs are going to make out, and they don't care. That happens all the time in every industry, stocks, Ponzi schemes, whatever. The execs are going to make out, and the regular folks who have already lost a lot of money are going to be held holding the bag. And those of us who don't gamble at all are going to be left holding the bag trying to support up a society of dudes who are strung out on gambling and who have lost their life savings. So I had to say something about that, man, because this Jontay Murray thing, like, if you haven't read that, go read that story, man, and tell me what's stopping anyone else in the NBA from doing something like that. How would we know? How would they know? They may catch after a couple of times. The algorithms may catch it after a couple of times. But the first time, they won't know. Are you cold that day, or are you just bricking shots on purpose? They won't know. So that's my take on that, y'all. The effects of gambling on our society. It's going to come, y'all. Watch. Y'all going to call me a prophet. All right, let's talk some hoops. NBA. The MVP voting criteria, man, is subjective, and it's always been subjective. It's hard to sit there and say, you know, this is the best player for this year. You know, there's no objective way, for the most part. There's no objective way to say this is the MVP. This guy is the MVP. Right? To me, my criteria has been, you know, best player, best team, or you had a crazy dominant year, or you had an historic feat like Russell Westbrook in his triple-double season, or you carried a bad team right to where they shouldn't be, that type of thing. If all those things fail, right, there's nobody that really fits into that criteria, then you give it to the best player, right? Best player in the league. So really the MVP this year probably would have been Joel Embiid had he stayed healthy. He was dominating. The process was dominating. But everybody else has a story, right? Jason Tatum is the best player on the best team. Kind of like how Steve Nash won two MVPs, being the best player on the best team over Kobe Bryant and Shaq and all these people. That was a story back then. He wasn't the best player in the league. He was the best player on the best team. Some people will tell you Steve Nash wasn't even the best player on his team, but he racked up all the assists, and people assumed that he was the best player on that team, on the Suns teams. So he won back-to-back MVPs. So Jason Tatum, like Steve Nash, has a case, best player, best team to win MVP. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has a breakthrough performance. Like, in a crazy season. And his team wouldn't be where they are without him, battling for the first spot in the West. A la Derrick Rose in 2011. Like, crazy breakout season. And the Chicago Bulls got the number one overall seed because of Derrick Rose. Like, the Thunder aren't where they are without SGA, no doubt about it. So that's his story, right? Breakthrough performance, and his team wouldn't be where they are without him. Luka has had a crazy statistical year. Kind of like James Harden had. That was James Harden's story. I can't have this crazy season and you can't give me MVP. And all of these guys have to face the best perimeter defenses, best perimeter defenders, and they got to get the buckets. They got to create for their team. Like, these guys have had amazing seasons. But all you hear now, whether it's on TV or social media, is people trying to tell us that, oh, it's a runaway that the Joker is winning this MVP. Joker is clearly the best player in the league, so he's going to win the MVP. So you throw away all these other stories. You throw away Jason Tatum being best player on the best team. You throw away SGA having such a crazy breakthrough season and having his team competing for the number one spot, a young team who probably shouldn't be there. You throw away Luka, you know, having a crazy dominant statistical season. You throw all that away just to tell me that the Joker is the MVP by a landslide. Nobody's even close. And the only thing Nuggets fans and Jokic fans and people in the media who support Jokic for no other reason other than he's the Joker and they think he's the best player in the league, the only thing they have to say is they point to the analytics. Because currently Joker is ninth in points per game, third in assists, fourth in rebounds. Really good season. Deserving of MVP consideration. But in 2021, the Joker did not have a crazy statistical season, but he still won MVP over somebody like Giannis, who should have probably won his third straight, or Steph Curry, because there was a story for him. In 2020-2021, Joker was 12th in points per game, 6th in assists, 9th in rebounds. His team was 3rd in the West. He won the MVP. There was a story created for the Joker to win MVP in 2020-21. In 21-22, the Joker won again. He was 6th in points per game, 8th in assists, 2nd in rebounds, 6th in the West. But there was a story created. Jamal Murray was out, right? It was because of Joker, they were at even 6 in the West. So a narrative was created to get the Joker that second MVP. Last year, people were saying he should have won MVP when he was 18th in points per game. 4th in assists, 3rd in rebound. Yeah, he was 1st in the West, but people were trying to say he should have won MVP. So no matter what happens, no matter what the Joker looks like, people want him to win MVP. Strictly because of analytics, all of these stats and VORP and BPM, some of these things that have nothing to do with actual basketball, watching the game, like they make up these narratives and these stories telling me that the Joker is the MVP. So you overlook best player, best team, Jason Tatum. You overlook a breakout performer like SGA and a Thunder. You overlook Luka and his crazy, amazing statistical season. And you say, hey, the Joker is the MVP because of these VORP stats. I don't care about those damn things. And it's not that he shouldn't win MVP, he can't be MVP. It's that his previous MVPs were created based off of storylines. So now you can't tell me you can't create a storyline. These other guys can't win because of their storyline. The Joker now is now above reproach in his game. And people act like he's this perfect cat. And honestly, I'm going to be honest with you here. I feel like the Joker is becoming overrated. Because now people are talking about the Joker. People are saying, well, if the Joker wins another MVP, he's better than Shaq. on my all-time list. What? What? So yeah, now the Joker, as much as I like the guy, he's becoming overrated because people are starting to put him in conversations that he doesn't belong in yet. Only because of advanced analytics. So the Joker is not only getting the benefit of the doubt today, he's getting the benefit of the doubt all time now because people are like, well, the Joker's, if he wins one more MVP and one more championship, he's better than Shaq. No, he's not. No, he's not. Like, Shaq was so dominant and people just forget that. So allow me to pause right there and talk about Shaq a little bit so y'all can stop disrespecting Shaquille O'Neal. People naming their kids Shaquille because of Shaq. How dominant. He came in dominating. Shaq came in the NBA in 93, like averaging like 23 points a game. He was dominating, dominant. For 13 years, Shaq averaged 20 and 10. And a lot of those years, it was like 27, 28, 29, and 13 boards. Like, Shaq was dominant. Joker's been great for 4 years, and people are already ready to have him surpass Shaquille O'Neal. Are you kidding? No way that's true. While Shaq was sitting there dominating actual big men and centers, the Joker is sitting there dominating, you know, stick figures. Like, his only competition is like is Joel Embiid. And whenever Joel Embiid sees him, he's food. But people want to talk about all these VORPs and all these advanced analytics. Now, watch basketball. Shaq was a beast, an animal. Like, he was that guy that nobody wanted to face. And honestly, if the Joker faced Shaq, like, in Shaq's prime, like, the Joker would be looking like Greg Ostertag on a Shaq dunk. Because he would be postering him and bodying him each time. So please stop disrespecting Shaq, and please stop overrating the Joker. He ain't there yet. The man's been great literally 4 years. Shaq came out the gate on a heater, bro. Y'all need to stop. And stop assuming that the Joker is the MVP like nobody else in this conversation. Like, Nuggets fans will have you believe, like, the Joker is like a great defender now. Are you kidding me? He may not be a cone no more, but the Joker is not a great defender. I don't care what your advanced stats tell you. And when they try to show you highlights, the stuff that Nuggets fans try to show you is essentially people, you know, missing shots, and Joker, you know, is like the closest defender. He ain't doing nothing. Like, he doesn't challenge anything at the rim. Like, he's not deterring anybody from going to the rim as a big 7-footer. He ain't doing none of that. The Joker is not a good defender, not even a little bit. But because he's, you know, got these advanced stats that speak for him, people use that to make you think Joker's a good defender. Nah. No. We watch, dog. We watch. People watch basketball. Joker is not a good defender, all right? He's a one-way player, and you're trying to compare this guy to Shaquille O'Neal, and it's not like Shaq was a great defender, but Shaq was a much better rim protector and deterrer than what the Joker is. But people are insane, man. So it feels like, you know, it's a foregone conclusion that the Joker is about to get his third MVP, when in reality, his first two MVPs were made up from storylines. But all of a sudden, nobody else can have a storyline to win an MVP. Like, let's just give the MVP award to the Joker, man. It's crazy. The man is great, no doubt. But don't act like nobody else can be in this MVP conversation. And certainly, don't act like this man is up there with Shaq right now. Not even close. Not even close. Shaq was bodying real dudes. The Joker is bodying Anthony Davis. And Nick Claxton and these skinny boys. Come on, man. Don't do that. It makes me sound like a hater, but I'm not. I love the Joker. But y'all not going to disrespect Shaq, all right? Sorry. Y'all not going to disrespect Shaq. All right, last thing, and I'm going to get up out of here, y'all. On that note, the Denver Nuggets are a great team. The Denver Nuggets are not invincible. Don't let nobody fool you, all right? They're a great team. They're probably the leader in the clubhouse to win the chip this year again. But the Nuggets aren't invincible. And don't let nobody tell you that nobody can give them a run for their money. If they play the Lakers, they're going to beat the Lakers. The Lakers have no size for them. They're going to beat the Lakers. They might sweep them. But the Denver Nuggets don't want to see the Timberwolves. The Timberwolves are still young, but they got the height. And they got a dog in Anthony Edwards, and their defense is legit. Styles make fights. I already said the T-Wolves probably don't want to see the Lakers because Styles make fights. Styles make fights. The Denver Nuggets don't want to see the T-Wolves. I'm telling y'all that right now. All right? They got the height, and they got the young stud up and coming, and their defense is legitimate. So say whatever you want to say. The Denver Nuggets don't want to see the T-Wolves, and the Denver Nuggets don't want to see the Phoenix Suns either because they got dudes who can go nuclear at any time. KD can win a game by himself. Book can win a game by himself. Like, Bradley Beal can go off and win a game by himself. They don't need to go in the paint. They don't even need to mess with the Joker in the paint. They'll waste fouls with Nurkic. They'll waste fouls, on the Joker. They'll have to contend with Jamal Murray. But the Suns can absolutely beat the Denver Nuggets. KD has shown that by himself already in the regular season. Like, by himself, he can beat these boys. I know Jamal Murray may have been absent. Just be on the lookout for that. Styles make fights. The Suns can beat, definitely take them to seven games. But this Suns team can beat the Nuggets. The Suns can beat the Nuggets. And the T-Wolves, I think, can beat the Nuggets as well. All right? So y'all look out for that. Say what y'all want to say. Nuggets are a great team, but I don't think they're invincible. The Suns and T-Wolves can definitely give them problems. Not that I trust the Suns so much. I still don't trust them. I think they still need a PG. But having said all that, they could still give them problems in the playoffs. Seven-game series. Game slows down. Maybe even the Clippers. The Clippers might be able to give them problems. Who knows? If they get their act right, the Clippers may give the Nuggets problems. It ain't going to be easy for Denver, for sure. People are already penciling them in as a champion. Y'all watch out for that, all right? When they run into those boys, y'all tell them I said so. Y'all tell them I said so. All right, y'all. As always, appreciate y'all hanging out, listening to me and my thoughts. Let me know what y'all think. Let me know how y'all feel about it. Comment, like, share with your friends and family. I'm going to catch you guys next time on Sports and the Real Shit. Mike. Peace. I'm going straight to the top. Just put the sack on the clock. I am Ray Allen's a shot. I'm going straight to the top.